my name is Angela Anderson, and I'm the host of Deep Dive with Region 5. Welcome, and thank you for joining us today. In Deep Dive with Region 5, we will share more about Region 5 Development Commission and North Central Economic Development Association programs and the work that we're doing in Region 5, which covers Cass, Crow Wing, Morrison, Todd, and Wadena counties in central Minnesota. In this episode, we share more about renewable energy and energy planning. For this conversation, we pulled in some energy experts. First of all, I'd like to welcome you all to the podcast. Let's take a moment for introductions. Cheryl, would you like to start us off?
Hi, Angela. This is Cheryl Hills, Executive Director of Region 5 Development Commission and the North Central Economic Development Association. Happy to be here.
Thank you. Welcome. How about you, Erica?
Hi, my name is Erica Bieland. I'm a regional development planner with the Region 5 Development Commission, and I joined the team in July.
Awesome. Thank you. Jason?
Hey, Angela. My name is Jason Edens, and I work with JBJ World Industries. Thank you so much for having me today.
You're welcome. Thank you for being here. And lastly, but certainly not least, BJ?
Hey, Angela. My name is BJ Allen, and I am also here with JBJ World. Nice to be here. Thanks for having us.
I think it's interesting to note that this group has a long-standing history and partnership. Jason and BJ as the founders of Rural Renewable Energy Alliance and Real Solar, and Erica as a former employee of Real, and all of us being involved in an innovative solar project for the schools in our region. So first of all, let's just dive into a little bit of history, if we could. Cheryl, can you share with us a little bit more about the renewable energy and energy planning in our region?
Sure. The background for energy really goes back, almost a decade when I first met Jason Edens at a project. We had a low impact development project working with Savantis Technologies in Baxter, Minnesota. And Jay can feed into that a little bit more, but we met each other. And then soon after there, I got a chance to meet more of the REAL, Rural Renewable Energy Alliance, that acronym is REAL, team members. And subsequently after that, later, I got to meet BJ. But the work that initially started through the region was orchestrated around a convening that the Initiative Foundation held probably back in 2007, where 40, 50 folks came into a room and said, we have a need to understand more about renewable energy and about energy conservation broadly. At that time, to spare you some of the boring details, we received some dollars and did a series of workshops all over the region, of which Jay was a leading speaker, Jason Edens, a leading speaker in those series of workshops, where we talked about renewable energy, many different types, solar, thermal. We talked about thermal. We talked about methane digesters. We learned about wind and the capacity, and we learned a lot about energy conservation as well. So we did those. And then we moved into the Resilient Region effort in about 2010, whereas energy became one of the 10 theme areas that was pulled out by the region, over 600 residents who participated in this planning process over a period of 2 years. And they indicated that renewable energy was also not only an economic engine to our region in terms of jobs and opportunities and efficiencies and saving government money, but also as an akin to our environmental stewardship goals that was under another theme area. So it layered well, but it warranted enough attention to be a standalone theme area. And from that work, Jason participated in that Resilient Region effort for several years and worked with HRAs and lots of other folks in the region, housing redevelopment authorities, and other folks to think about how energy does intersect with their work in affordable housing or local foods, et cetera. We did some solar thermal high tunnels. We've done a lot of fun projects together around energy, but we'll get to the main one in a bit here. Jay, does that, or because I know Erica doesn't have this history, or BJ, give a little bit of that history?
Yeah, absolutely. The Central Minnesota Alternative Energy, what was the RC? I think I forget the last half of that acronym, but it was
regional,
a great opportunity.
Regional Collaborative.
There we go. But it was a great opportunity just to do some foundational education and outreach around renewable energy and energy efficiency. So yeah, I think it was a really good value, and it definitely catalyzed, you definitely catalyzed a lot of important conversations in the region.
Angela, that work, and I know that's what we're getting into with this discussion, and that relationship, frankly, a very authentic relationship through a difficult subject matter to kind of talk to communities about. First of all, energy feels a little bit like voodoo. You're never not quite sure how it works or what it works or where it goes, and it's confusing, right? And so we forged a very strong relationships with REAL and as authentic partners who could help us navigate some of that complexity, that trust, that relationship, and I tell you, only that relationship led us into solar schools. And it is what helped us survive it as well. So the Solar Schools Initiative is one I know you wanted to focus on, but that should give you a little history and context that it was, while it was project-based, it was also very relational.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. So I think there is a few things we want to talk about, and just renewable energy in general and energy planning, but also one of the big projects that we did have was the Solar Schools project. So if we can, let's skip over just to Erica, if we can just talk a little bit more about what our role is as the Region 5 Development Commission and why it's important and why we're doing that work.
Sure. So right now, after all of these projects and all of the history that we've had in renewable energy and the environment space in general, we've now come to this place this past year with doing pilot energy and environment plans with the cities of Hackensack and Staples, and we're working with Jason and BJ on those plans. And each of the cities are getting $10,000 from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency to do the plans and then implement those plans through these action steps related to energy and environment that we are prioritizing. So the action steps are different for both communities, but they're really meant to be for the next 5 years and related to energy and environment and what the cities can tangibly do in the next 5 years. So that's what we're working on right now. And we're hoping to do even more of them in this new year with more cities as we keep learning and as we keep working on these plans.
The only thing I would add to that, Erica, because you did such a great job, thank you so much, is that the question is really a good one as to why Region 5? Why the heck are you guys doing this work? What are you doing in this space even? Not only was it that history that led us to that point through some regional plans, the Comprehensive Regional Economic Development Strategy, or RCEDS, is an economic development plan. Every year, it is also pointed to the need to do energy and think about it. But bringing Erica on was a really aggressive sort of way for us to say we are vested in this space for a long period. And the answer to the question of why us is because there is rationale around doing some of these projects on a regional scale, economically difficult, but there is some rationale. And we were the entity that was most willing to do that on a regional scale, transcending all the five counties that we serve. But I would love to hear Jay's or BJ's perspective on that, because they ran and founded a very wonderful energy company within this region. And so I'm biased as to why us, but I'd love to hear what they think.
Well, thanks for the opportunity, Cheryl. One of the things that I was thinking as I was listening to you and Erica talk was regarding some of the work that Region 5 already does around comprehensive planning with local cities in our region, and how well energy and environment planning aligns with those comprehensive plans. I mean, what we're able to do with energy and environment planning with local cities is really dive into emergency threats and, you know, extreme weather events that the cities are experiencing now they might not have experienced in the past. Droughts, anything from droughts to derechos, straight line winds. And so these projects that we're able to actually go through and implement with the cities have the potential to mitigate those negative impacts of those extreme weather and other emergency threats. So again, as part of that comprehensive planning process, it just aligns really well with what Region 5 does so well.
Yeah. Not only does it align well with what you already do, but Region 5 is known as an innovator, and there aren't a lot of comprehensive planners that have integrated energy and environment into the comprehensive planning process. So to answer your question, Cheryl, why Region 5? I think it's because there's a culture of innovation, and integrating energy and environment planning into the comprehensive planning process, you know, that's kind of part of your DNA to innovate. And it's a really exciting idea. I mean, I think ultimately municipalities and local units of government all across the country will have to do some sort of energy and environment planning, either as part of an existing comprehensive planning process or as their, you know, their next one. So I think it's really innovative and really exciting and logical.
Thank you all. That was an awesome conversation about that, and just sharing your thoughts. I think that was very informative. The next thing we want to talk to a little bit about is some of the challenges. And I know that could be more than one podcast probably to talk about all the challenges. But Erica, do you have anything that you're seeing in starting to do this work?
I think there's a lot to be learned, and because energy and environment can encompass a lot of different things. So we've tried to narrow it down a little bit to different sections that we've been focusing on. I think we have six different sections of trying to really define what energy environment might be and not making it everything, even though it could be everything all at once. I think another challenge is maybe that COVID is when we started all of these plans too. So we've been trying to adapt a little bit and figuring out exactly what a meaningful conversation means while we're on Zoom meeting all of these people in new spaces. But I feel like we've learned a lot, and we're starting to adapt even more and learn even more. So yeah, the challenges, I feel like we're starting to learn from more and more now.
Thank you. And I think it makes sense that there's not just one cookie cutter thing that we can apply to every community. Everybody's different, and that we kind of need to assess those needs and where they're at. And some may be farther ahead than others, and some may have no idea how to even get started. So that makes sense that kind of we need to adjust based on the community. Jason or BJ, do you have anything to add to challenges that you see in the renewable energy space?
Oh my gosh. Well, you are absolutely right. That could be multitudes of podcasts. But I guess one of the things I wanted to add before I try and answer that question directly is one of the things that really excites me about energy and environment planning as part of the comprehensive planning process is it's a common denominator. I mean, there isn't a single town or a single local unit of government in the state of Minnesota that doesn't have to take into consideration the energy and environment when going through its comprehensive planning process, right? So it's very logical for this to become a default part of the comprehensive planning process. And I think in hindsight, you know, Region 5 will be recognized as a first mover or an early adopter in this space. And that's really exciting. But in terms of challenges for the renewable energy sector, that's a very difficult question. But I think there's a huge need to diversify the workforce. I think there's a huge need to develop the workforce. Most of the clean energy and efficiency jobs in the state of Minnesota are not surprisingly concentrated in the metro areas, but there's a lot of opportunity in greater Minnesota. So that certainly is a challenge, is creating opportunities for local workforce development, and particularly in lower income communities and BIPOC communities. So that's definitely a challenge. The other thing that's a challenge is what we've often called the solar coaster, right? Where there's basically just this undulating regulatory environment, right? So one year there's a certain suite of incentives or subsidies or programs, and the following year those programs may or may not exist. And it's really hard for any entity to develop a business in that environment. So that's another challenge. And then finally, I would say that access to finance, but even more importantly, access to inclusive finance, because there's certainly clean energy finance mechanisms, but they're not all created equal. And some I would describe as inclusive, and some I would describe as extractive. So that's another challenge, is as we make this energy transition, ensuring that the finance mechanisms are equitable and empowering for our local communities.
Thank you, Jason.
BJ, if I could chime in just a little bit here. Yeah, thanks. One of the challenges that I was thinking of listening to you all have this conversation was, again, to revisit the workforce development piece and what that leads into, which is really sort of this community understanding of energy and energy consumption and energy efficiency. And in Minnesota, we particularly have a complicated energy landscape where you could literally work somewhere where you have one utility that serves you, and that could be only electricity. And then you could go home and you might have a different utility that delivers electricity to your home. And then you might have different natural gas providers for both of those locations. And each of those different utilities would have different incentives for you for energy efficiency, for renewable energy, and other things. And so just for the average citizen, navigating that space is incredibly complicated. And so even though, you know, we have worked for so many years on doing outreach and education at the community level, at the individual level, you know, there's still quite a bit to be done in that regard to get everyone up to the same understanding of the energy landscape and how it works in Minnesota. So I think that challenge really can manifest itself in the community work and synergy and environment planning work. And like you said earlier, Angela, with different communities being in different spaces in terms of their understanding of that landscape. So I think that's, again, that's something that we want to work on. It's actually something that seems to be bubbling up from these conversations that we're having with the communities, is that they're looking for local education and outreach even within their own communities.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point, BJ. You know, because, I mean, of course, as citizens are going through the comprehensive planning process, when the conversation of transportation comes up, you know, most people have some familiarity with how our transportation sector works. And when housing comes up, of course, most all of us have familiarity with different housing options and that kind of thing. But when energy comes up, it's often uncharted waters for a lot of the participants. And so in terms of some of the challenges around renewable energy in or energy and environment planning within the comprehensive planning process, you know, that's definitely a challenge, is there's a lot of community specific energy education that needs to take place in some circumstances.
Likely that energy education will come out through these planning processes as a need, identified as a need or a threat that the community. I mean, it's a fine line to walk between making sure that residents have enough information that they need to make really good decisions between, and not overloading them to the point to where they feel like they're trying to become some sort of expert. And so that's where we try to line that. The other couple challenges, Angela, is that communities, we've talked a lot about how cool it is that we're trying to incorporate energy environment as part of comprehensive plans. We also recognize we have to meet communities of where they are. What if they just did a comp plan and they don't want to redo it? Or they don't have the funds or any interest in redoing a comp plan, right? It may be even an older one that they don't want to do, but they still have an interest in energy environment and lays out some ideas and strategies around what to do in that space. And so where one of the challenges is making sure that we take this ideation of and including energy environment as part of a comp plan, but not prohibiting the participation from communities who are at a different stage. So much like planners do across the nation, we're trying to figure out how to weave this into where it works for a community. So Erica and Jay and BJ, one more of our colleagues at Region 5, maybe working on energy environment plans of the community, not through a comp plan process, but an addendum that they can add as their part of their comprehensive plan, a section, so to speak. So we're still navigating how to do that, how to meet communities where they are. And then as we segue into this next couple of questions that you may have, Angela, I also want to mention one more challenge is making sure that municipals understand that they too have a role in all of this, and that they have investment strategies that, believe it or not, can really make a difference in this space, and that can achieve goals from the community members in the space of energy environment with very little extra thought behind it. So thinking about how they are already making their investments and in ways that now can, add another advantage to energy environment, whether that capital improvement purchases or long-term capital projects or. So that's helping municipals understand part of that education process that they too have a role as a local unit of government with some yielding power to assist. Sometimes it's even just advocating for specific policy that is prohibitive to local units of government of doing what they want to do. So there's some pieces to that that are that we're trying to also work through is through that education, but that's it.
Thank you. Thank you all. I am going to skip down if I can just to the successes, because I think when we talk about challenges, it can be get a little frustrating or feel like we're not making too much headway. But I think it's important that you guys all talked about the education piece and just kind of slowly as we continue to talk about renewable energy, people will learn more and be comfortable talking about it. Could we share a little bit more about the successes that we've had? Any of you can chime in. We can talk about solar schools first a little bit.
You go, Jay.
Well, the Solar for Schools project was a collaboration between REAL, Region 5, and a local solar installer. And we were able to demonstrate how multiple school districts across a broad geography could essentially collaborate and collaboratively finance an ambitious solar project that would immediately reduce the school's cost of energy. And that was, it's my understanding that, and it certainly was a personal commitment, to immediately offer financial benefit to the schools through this project. So on day one, as soon as these various solar energy systems, again, that were scattered across the 5-county region, as soon as these systems were commissioned, they immediately offered savings to the school. And so that was fantastic because obviously many of our schools are resource constrained, and the opportunity to dedicate more resources to teachers and books and students is generally preferable to paying the energy bill, right? And so that was one of the driving forces of the project, and as was workforce development. So one of the things that was really interesting and exciting and certainly a personal point of pride for me is that we were able to invite a collaboration with the Leech Lake Tribal College as part of this project. So as these systems were being built across Region 5, we had a number of students from the Leech Lake Tribal College and the Leech Lake community that were able to get hands-on experience in solar design build. And that entry-level opportunity and experience, you know, can become a golden ticket for those who are interested in entering the clean energy workforce. So that's, you know, those are two of the successes that come to mind with that project, but those are just a couple.
So for context, Angela and Jay and BJ, please help me. 1,493, is that correct? Kilowatt hours per, so that was the total project size dispersed amongst the six schools. That was a $3.5 million project. $2 million of that was a grant from XL Energy, which came with all of its own restrictions. And then we had another million and a half investment from a third-party tax credit investor from the East Coast. And so we had, it was complex. One of the things that the schools appreciated was not having to manage that, the complexities of the fiscal administration of a project like that. It could not have been done without the REAL team and in one of the worst winters ever. But that project taught us a lot about how to aggregate municipal projects into one project that would be more financially competitive and feasible. It's difficult for us in rural places to have we don't have huge airports or huge buildings where the scale makes sense for us to do a project and then to get tax credit investors who would be interested in a project like that. So we were creative and we came up with this scattered site development, and REAL was magnanimous in deploying it all. So that was the benefit to the schools as well. In addition to the energy savings and the workforce training and the training of the students, the education for the students, but also the capacity for a regional organization to take on. And this was REAL in Region 5 daily looking at those spreadsheets, not any one of us alone, to pull it off, a project like that.
Yeah, it's also the biggest system on a school in the state at the point at which we flipped the switch. And I feel like it also inspired the Minnesota legislature to work on a Solar for Schools bill to make this more possible and hopefully easier for the next schools that want to do the same thing.
Thank you, BJ. That's a super good point. I know in all of the work that we're doing at Region 5, we like to offer all of our what we've learned and lessons learned and kind of a little roadmap of what we did and how other communities can copy us if they want to, if it makes sense. So I think that is a great point. Thank you. Does anyone else have anything to add about successes before we move on?
I just have one more thing, Angela. One of the things that I'm really excited about that project is the educational value, right? These systems will be in service for 30 years, maybe 40 years, potentially longer. But over that service life, tens of thousands, 20s of thousands of students will have the opportunity to see these systems up close and personal. And of course, today's youth are making tomorrow's energy choices. And so there's really a huge educational value to that. And that's really exciting. I mean, this is a project that will pay dividends to the community for decades in that regard as well.
I love that. And I'm glad that you mentioned that because that's very important. I think that we can't even put a price on or a dollar amount on that because it's infinite. So that's great. Thank you for that. Next, if we can just talk a little bit, we shared some information just about that project specifically, but as we move forward with energy planning, Cheryl, can you talk a little bit more about who is helping to fund that program and who are the partners that we're working with for that?
Well, the energy planning piece of it, as Erica indicated, was MPCA invested in those two communities of which the team is working on right now. Department of Commerce, U.S. Department of Commerce Economic Development Administration, fondly known of as EDA, has also funded through COVID some dollars to each economic development district that they have relationships with across the nation to address pandemic planning, pandemic response, recovery and response. We opted in our work plan submitted and approved by EDA to include energy environment planning as a core function of that pandemic recovery and response platform. So Erica is, the MPCA dollars cover none of Region 5's time. It's for partners, amazing experts in the field like JBJ World to participate in this with us. But Erica's covered by EDA, which we will include in some of these about how those energy environment plans also help us be more responsive to future pandemics and future issues that arise, as the team already indicated, through threats. Threats can come in financial waves or in environmental waves or in social waves. And so we're trying to think about how do we address all of those. And that's one of the hats that Erica gets to wear and is funded by EDA. I would be remiss to not mention, too, while we receive dollars for our partners to participate in and use their expertise in the region, they come with a match 100% of the time, even as private sector partners. And so we are fortunate to be blessed with companies like JBJ who will come to the table and say, yes, we'll participate in this. It's part of our passion, our mission, and our objective, business objectives, but they put in a match. And so that's really hard for some areas of the nation to do, but it's a funding source, to be very frank and honest. So I need to call that out.
Thank you, Cheryl. Okay, let's do this if we can. I know a lot of times and a lot of what I'm hearing in our conversation today is about collaborations and partnerships. And so can we talk a little bit more about that, of what you're seeing? And let's just start with Erica, if you can share with us what you're seeing in that arena.
Yeah, as far as collaborations go, I think when we were first starting, when I was first talking to a bunch of different cities that have done energy and environment related projects in Minnesota, we talked about this a little bit before, but I quickly found out that there are not very many small cities doing these types of plans throughout the state. So I think it was a build off of looking at bigger plans too, and then thinking, okay, what does this actually mean for smaller cities like Staples and Hackensack and most of the cities in our region? So I think a lot of the partnerships maybe that we've worked with, or people we've reached out to, are people already doing a lot of the work and trying to interpret that and what that might mean for our region, because I feel like that a lot of that work hasn't been done quite yet. So I don't know, we've reached out to a lot of different people, clean energy resource teams, the DNR, the Nature Conservancy, a lot of people with a lot of different knowledge bases, and started from there. And I think gone from there too. So I started from there. And I also just wanted to mention too that it's been really great to work with the communities too, because what an investment over Zoom to have these longer meetings and be talking about something that, as you said, maybe not everyone knows that much about. It takes a lot of investment from them as well, and a lot of partnership and investing in that time, even outside of meetings sometimes, to be learning and to be prepared for meetings like this. So
thank you, Erica. Cheryl, can you talk a little bit? I have a note about the Great Plains Institute policy work. Do you have anything on that you want to share?
Only briefly, it's a very new initiative that both Jason and I are part of to understand, prioritize policy recommendations that would go to the state legislature as a result of what we're seeing in Minnesota. And Jay has a much better grasp of that. I, from a lending perspective, we do have some dollars, but how does that fold into everything else that's going on state and what may be coming down nationally to the states? We want to make sure to get ahead of that to make sure that our state has a framework of where they would invest any federal dollars should they come. So we're both members of that work. That's all I have to mention on that. I know Jay's got several other national groups that he's worked with, Angela.
Yes, thank you. And that would be my next question for Jay and BJ. If you have anything that you want to share just on the national level or the things that you're seeing with JBJ World, that we could just talk a little bit more about collaborations and partnerships that you're seeing.
Well, I'm really excited about continuing to work with the utilities. The utilities have a lot of options for all of their customers for reducing energy consumption, which means that it saves people money. And then another collaboration that I'm really excited with that Erica mentioned briefly is with the Nature Conservancy and also with the University of Minnesota and the Department of Natural Resources. They are working on modeling severe weather into the future. And they're also working on water quality protection efforts. And in each of our communities that we're currently working with on energy and environment plans, they have surface water that has been impacted by mercury and by phosphorus. So I think that these sort of collaborations are really exciting and really have an opportunity to improve things in the communities that the communities want to work on. So those are a couple of collaborations I'm excited about.
Thank you, BJ. You know, I feel like I need to back up a tiny bit, and I should have probably done this at the beginning, because when you said water quality, a little lightning bulb went off for me that when we are talking about renewable energy, can you just share what that means and kind of what it includes? And I know you can't maybe tell every single thing, but for some of our listeners who are listening to the podcast, they maybe only think of solar panels. So could you just, if you don't mind, share a little bit more so that we have kind of a general overview?
That's a great idea, Angela. I'm glad you did that, because one of the things that I wanted to make sure folks realize is that Minnesota is not a particularly rich state regarding fossil fuels. We don't have any coal in Minnesota, nor do we have gas or oil. So most of the dollars that we spend on energy in the state of Minnesota leave the state ultimately. And that's approximately $20 billion a year. So Minnesota is literally spending about $20 billion a year in order to purchase our energy. And so one of the advantages of clean energy or renewable energy is that it's often locally owned, it's locally generated, and those dollars actually have a multiplier. They recirculate in our communities more often than not, especially for well-designed projects. And so even though I'm not answering your question directly yet, Angela, I just wanted to point out that Minnesota doesn't have a lot of fossil fuel resources. So when we're able to generate our energy locally, there are a number, it's an economic engine, right? There are a number of economic benefits. So what exactly is clean energy? Well, if you ask five energy folks, you'll probably get five different answers, but it runs at least, yeah, maybe five, maybe 10. It runs the gamut from just solar and wind to things that include large hydro projects, or some even would include nuclear energy as at least a low carbon technology. So it kind of depends, but I would say that solar and wind are certainly on one side of the continuum. There are a wide variety of biomass renewable technologies that certainly makes sense in parts of Minnesota. Hydro is often considered a renewable energy technology, and it certainly is by Minnesota's renewable portfolio standard. What am I missing, BJ?
Oh, well, I was thinking of backing up a little further because this conversation has been covering a wide variety of topics. And I think sort of from where I'm sitting, the way that I was looking at this conversation is it was more focused on energy and environment planning. But of course, Jay and I both have so much experience in the renewable energy field. It's pretty easy to get sidetracked off onto that one track of the energy and environment realm. So I would say the energy and environment realm certainly encompasses renewable energy. It encompasses energy efficiency. It encompasses water quality. It encompasses air quality. It encompasses transportation decisions. And that's something that was brought up by Erica very early on in this conversation is that energy and environment planning can be so broad. I mean, basically, it's everything in our natural world. So renewable energy is definitely one of those pieces. So hopefully that made sense.
Yeah, and since BJ mentioned energy efficiency, you know, the cheapest kilowatt hour or, you know, unit of heat is the one that we never use, right? And there's a zillion opportunities for us as homeowners and business owners and city managers to manage and reduce our load so that our overall energy budget is, you know, is lessened. But it also makes renewable energy a little bit more accessible and affordable by managing the load on the front end.
Thank you both for that clarification and explanation. I think that was helpful. Anything else you want to share with our listeners before we wrap up, Cheryl?
I think just maybe in closing, I want to say, obviously, that we're really interested in making sure that we connect with all community members on this energy environment planning particularly. So it doesn't matter where you fall on the spectrum. If you feel like you're a naysayer and this is just a bunch of bunk, that's fine. We need your voice. Your voice is important. Your thoughts, your processes. If you're passionate about energy, environment, and you think this is, you know, we need to do so much more, and maybe you're really concerned about climate issues, then your voice is important too. And so I think it's important that we have all voices, and Erica and the team are doing such a great job of trying to reach out, but we need help in that space to get more folks involved. Your voice is important as a community member. So I think that's my message, is that please reach out to Erica. Contact information, I'm sure, will be at the end of this podcast, Angela, but to participate in any one of these. We are looking to do 10 more energy environment plans if funded by a proposal we're submitting over the next 2 years. That's a lot of engagement throughout the region, the five counties. And so if you have any interest at all, no matter where you fall on the spectrum, we'd love to have more folks participate.
Thank you, Cheryl. And that was just going to be my last thing, is I was wanting to share how listeners can get involved if they're curious to learn more, who they should contact.
Yeah, you can contact me. My email is ebjelland, ebjelland, at region5.org.
Thank you, Erica. And I'll be sure to put that in the notes too. So wonderful. Thank you guys so much. This was very informative, very helpful, and I appreciate your time and just sharing your knowledge with us. It's been wonderful.
Thanks for having us, Angela.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks,
Enjoy
PJ.
The beautiful day.
You too. Thank you for joining us today. We encourage you to visit our website at region5.org, where you can learn more about our programs, sign up for our newsletter, and follow us on social media.